Is that Luke stayed in frame?
Oh dear. Hello everyone and welcome to Out of Print. This is a bit of a cultural commentary podcast with a very slight literary twist, emphasis on the very slight. My name is Sophie.
And I'm Alice.
And I'm Emmeline.
And Emmeline, you have brought this week's kind of thesis in, I believe, although I've heard rumblings that Alice is sending you some drunk texts.
Oh yeah, this is a good place to start, because what better place to start than analysing a text of one of our very own. Alice, do you want to give any context as to where you were last night?
So I was at a climate conference, and my colleague at about 3:30 was like, should we get a drink? And I was like, yeah. And then we kept getting drinks.
So for context, I send Alice a message saying, you know, let your hair down, have a good time, like, what are you up to, what you at? And she says, we've ordered some food, a kind of cray amount of full stop, capital letter F, food. I'm like, okay. She said, and then says, and this is in the same string of messages sent at the same time, I am just coming home now, fuckers. I will be quiet as a wee mouse when I get in.
Which I wasn't.
Who are you wearing those fucking boots?
Who are you annoyed with?
Because the final message I got from Alice is, shut my God, am I drunk?
Shut my God, am I drunk?
Shut my God.
You're the only person I know that can turn a fucking work climate conference into the biggest piss up. It was on a Wednesday night as well, Thursday.
The day is
like fucking hell, girl.
I also have a good anecdote which I've been saving to tell you guys. It's not about me personally, so I'll keep the names and context veiled. This is specifically about dating, which I thought would be relevant for the theme of today's podcast. One of my friends was at London Fields Lido back in summer, was chilling. We'd just been talking about the fact that we felt like we hadn't been approached by men for a while in terms of them asking, you know, if you want to go on a date, yada, yada. We feel like the culture about that is not as prevalent as it was a certain time. And it was kind of spontaneous timing that she was there chilling. A guy came up to her. She was lying down. I don't know why I'm giving it. She was lying down at the Lido.
It's like a soft porn.
Yeah. She was lying down. Okay. It's not this podcast. This guy comes up to her. He's basically like, hey, I don't do this very often. I don't mean to be like weird or to, you know, disturb you when you're having a moment of peace and quiet, but I just think you're really beautiful and I'm just wondering if you'd be interested in going for a drink sometime.
Okay.
And at first she was interested, but she said that he had a kind of an energy that was not the energy which she wanted to say yes to, which I didn't pry too much at this stage. I was kind of like, oh, you've just been saying you wanted someone to ask you out. Yeah. And then he started talking about football a lot, and I don't know, she was just like, oh, we're not on the same page.
Okay, sure.
And then eventually she said, I'm really sorry, I can't go out with you, like, I've got a boyfriend. And then he said, well, I hope you marry him, and walked away.
Ooh.
Okay, so that's instance one. She doesn't really think anything about it, but she mentions this to me. She goes home that night to her flatmates and is telling them this story. And her flatmate, at a certain point in the conversation, turns around and says, wait, what? Her flatmate, that day, had been shopping at the supermarket, and a guy had come up to her, the same guy.
You're joking!
Come up to her, says...
He doesn't do it very often.
Yeah. He literally says to her, I'm really sorry to interrupt you, I don't do this every often.
Oh, for God's sake.
I think you're beautiful, and I was just wondering if you want to go for a drink. She immediately was like, I'm really sorry, I've got a boyfriend. He said, I hope he marries you.
Was he just like on a rampage but around East London?
Like, it gives me... spine tingles.
It's just yuck.
It's strange.
It's really
right?
yucky.
Yeah.
It reminds me of those like YouTube videos.
Pick up artists.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I was in Leicester Square the other day and some guy came up to me and he was like, are you Polish? And I was like, no. And I was like, where is this going? And I think he was very quickly trying to ask me out. And then I kind of like left the situation. And then he went over to someone else and asked the same woman, another woman, like, are you Polish?
I'm very curious as to how the kind of like creepy pickup artist story relates to the thesis for this week. Because for context, Emmeline just told us to prep some kind of like Hinge horror stories and any thoughts about dating apps, but we don't know any more than that.
We're kind of thinking that with these episodes, so we're, as you can probably start to ascertain if you listen to last week's, we're going to take it in turns for each of us to bring a text and a topic and each have that as kind of our central thesis for the episode. The girls know each time the title of the episode, but maybe, and the sort of themes, but not the specifics of what we're going to talk about. So the title of this episode is Where Have All the Good Men Gone? And Other Rhetorical Questions, which is a Shrek 2 reference. And is not, as a caveat before I get into this, is not, it's a rhetorical question. That is not me saying anything kind of sweeping about what I think about the state of men, women, dating, etc. It refers quite specifically to an interesting and some sort of controversial articles that I went on a rabbit hole down with a few months ago, particularly from the New York Times' Modern Love column.
I love Modern Love.
Yeah, which is, for people that don't know it, a series of personal essays that readers from around the world submit, and just with their experiences of being in love or their relationships. And it's got, I think it's been made into a podcast series, a TV show, etc. But yeah, so there was a really interesting article I read a few months ago from that series called Men, Where Have You Gone? Please Come Back, by an author called Rachel Drucker, who is in her 50s, still actively dating. And the setup of the essay is that she's out for dinner with her friends, I think in a restaurant in Chicago, and she takes a look around the restaurant and there is an absence of men. And it serves as a kind of metaphor for the piece, which she goes on to write about the disappearance, as she perceives it, of men within the sort of social spheres of dating, instead finding them behind paywalls, behind firewalls, behind their own four walls. This idea that maybe particularly post-COVID and with a rise in certain ideologies, that there's been a shift in how men and women date, also particularly because of dating apps, which is something that we all have experience with, which I'm keen to talk about. She has this specific take that women used to be seen as a prize or an accessory for men in the wake of women's liberation and fourth wave feminism, that women posed as a threat to a version of masculinity within the dating world that she says we've not really come to terms with yet, and that dating apps create this essence of performative closeness and intimacy. There are so many examples of, in dating, she talks a lot, quite sort of stereotypically, about examples of dating where men present themselves as being very intimate and close, and then vanish and disappear.
Right.
So she's talking on a grander level about the disappearing of men from the dating sphere, and on a more molecular level about men who she dates in situationships where they'll come forward, offer a sense of who they could be and what a relationship could look like, and then disappear.
Okay.
So that's the first article. So that's probably the entryway into this discussion. But there are some other strands to come into.
Interesting. There's a lot there. What I'm interested in is the idea of like the kind of historic women were seen as a prize or an accessory. Is the point that she's making that with fourth wave feminism and how things have kind of changed and shifted around where women aren't prizes and accessories, is she taking issue with that and just saying, well, we haven't really figured out how to date in like an equal setting?
No, she's saying that there's just been a, she's saying that there's been a significant shift, that now women come forward more with their own desires, with their own agendas, with their own idea of what dating should look like and should be. And that it's sort of shifted the imbalance of quite a traditional pattern in dating, which we've had historically for years, where a man asks a woman out and a man takes her to dinner and pays for her dinner and, you know, approaches her. And that it's quite like a traditional route through, you know, stereotypically through people coming together. And now with online dating in particular, and also general like rise in sort of feminism and the women's movement, that it's a more level playing field. That so I worked in a bar for a year and a half recently, and I would say, just taking stock of the customers and conversations we had, that 80% of the way it was working in terms of people asking each other out was female customers approaching the male bartenders, which I thought was really interesting and cool, and I was here for it. But it was there were very few instances in which the reverse was happening. And I think that's part of what she's talking about. It's like what's happening with that shift, and are men retreating into their own kind of sphere because of that shift?
Because we've sort of gone off script.
Yeah.
Like, we had this script for centuries, and now it's like almost like with like queer dating, where there's not a script.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why, as a bisexual woman, or why a lot of bisexual women end up dating men because there's not a script. There's even less of a script for two women. But I think that, yeah, we've taken away the heteronormative model in the name of equality. But yeah, like what have we got to go on? What have men got to go on if they can't approach women for fear or whatever it is?
And she talks a lot about cyber dating and spheres of, I keep using the word sphere. It sounds so nice.
Very erudite.
It just feels good coming off the tongue, guys.
Yeah, I hear that.
I'm going to stop using it. She keeps talking about like the idea of circling intimacy, but never.
Is that you swapping out spheres?
No, she says it's verbatim. She says that there are a lot of examples of people circling intimacy, but never entering it.
Right.
And I feel like there's a lot of discussions that I've had with my guy friends that are scared to be vulnerable and are scared to be earnest when dating because there's a sort of layer of self-protection they've built around that process.
Yeah, but then I would make the argument that I don't think anyone is particularly earnest at the moment.
Like, I would agree. Yeah, I can agree.
Because I think often when women are kind of in the active role within dating and like asking men out or whatever, often that's done in a very kind of like feminist way, as in like I want you so I'm going after it. That's not necessarily earnest. That's quite it's like a display of power,
which leads really nicely onto the other article, which is slightly more controversial. Read the Reddit thread if you're interested.
Okay,
that's all I'm gonna say. And it's called The Trouble with Wanting Men by Jean Garnett, not related to you.
Oh, weird.
Right?
Didn't share her last name.
And crazy. I was alerted to this article. It was sent to me, I'm just going to remind you of the title, The Trouble with Wanting Men, was sent to me by a guy I had dated.
Oh, no.
That's how I became aware of this.
Who disappeared.
Who disappeared a little bit.
Oh, fuck. Oh, dear.
It was very ironic. So
the irony's real, guys.
Thanks for the episode, whatever your name was.
Yeah. And this article coins a term that comes out of the frustrations of the first article, of heterofatalism, which is this term that this woman, Jean, has created based on the term heteropessimism, which I'll come to later, which was coined by someone else, to describe a kind of mass frustration and despondency with the idea of being in a male-female dynamic where society has meant that these two people at the moment are struggling to communicate with each other and to enter into relationships. But the reason that article is quite controversial is that people find that term, and I think I agree with this, to be negative. If we're saying, oh, like, we should all be really down about dating and, you know, expect terrible things from men and whatever, I feel like it massively avoids a lot of really positive conversations to be had about how we can come together and tackle some of the things that are like the period that we're living in, the internet, post-COVID, certain ideologies rising, that they give us a lot of things to struggle with that we need to talk about and push through. Yeah.
It's like an opportunity to reinvent. We have an opportunity now to reinvent relationships and the way that we operate. This is like on a global scale. I guess I'm just thinking about yesterday, but like with climate change, the rise of fascism and people like Andrew Tate, we have all these crises in the dating sphere and in the like global sense.
Yeah.
But that means we have an opportunity to reinvent how we operate in the world. And I think heteropessimism, like you're saying, we're stepping away from the problem rather than, you know,
like
tackling it.
But I think that's generally what's happening at the moment. I think people are fucking tired.
Yeah.
So like there's a lot of chat at the moment about like voter fatigue. I'm a really big proponent of Scottish independence, for example, and the new leader of the SNP is like trying to rally people up. And I was chatting to someone about it and I was like, I'm too tired to think about Scottish independence. I just want to not have to think about anything for a while. And I think that's what's happening with like the climate crisis. People don't want to think about it, so they're doing what they want. And I think that all kind of trickles down where people are so exhausted that terms like heterofatalism come out where everyone just goes, fuck it, I'm just going to have casual sex because I can't be bothered to put the work in.
Or be celibate.
It's negative cohesion. And then the issue with that as well.
What does negative cohesion mean?
Negative cohesion is often used in political terms, but it's when you appeal to the masses based on your shared negative experience.
Okay.
Either you join together with someone because you can bitch about XYZ, or like
that's kind of what the far right are really good at.
That's exactly basically where it comes from.
That's also a massive issue with the left, because the left will tear each other apart over like identity politics.
Which is where this term becomes problematic, because it's like, and it's difficult because do I feel, you know, like fatalistic, pessimistic about dating? Sure. And like the experience that, you know, a lot of us and our peers have had pertains to this idea that women are really easily getting put into categories of avoidantly attached or anxiously attached. Mm. And they become these two very strict archetypes of people in dating. And it sort of perpetually means that people are very unsatisfied and leave feeling that there are patterns and similarities in dating.
Yeah, yeah. I think as well, also, like, people are just sick of... It's like online shopping, where... Mm. But you have no money.
Yeah.
So you go in, you put all the stuff in your cart, you like all the people, and then you realize like there's no currency, there's no actual attraction.
Yeah.
You have run out of energy from previous negative dating experiences.
Yeah.
And then you just leave everything in the cart. That's what's happening. Mm,
yeah. That's a really good analogy.
Stop.
It's like, yeah, like Hinge is such a fucking basket of stuff that you might buy.
Box of frogs.
Okay, so let's talk about Hinge and the idea of, okay, people vanishing as well, because that's what a lot of this article is saying, and that pertains to a lot of people's experience with Hinge, right? So, you know, you get so far with someone, you meet up, and then they disappear. Do you guys have experience with that?
My thoughts on it, I'm very lucky in that I don't have experience of ghosting. One person ghosted me, and I essentially sort of shook him down and was like, hello? What's the fucking deal? But I did some research when you were talking about, you know, Hinge and stuff. And Forbes published an article in July 2025, which talks about the Singles in America survey, also done in 2025. And it says in the survey that 16% of singles who were surveyed say that they've interacted with AI as a romantic companion. So 33% of Gen Z, that's a third of our peer group.
33% of Gen Z.
That would mean one of us.
Yeah. And 23% of millennials. And I think kind of like where it comes in is people are so tired of like ghosting and giving energy to people. Online dating also creates this kind of like simulacrum where you're just talking to people online and you're not actually going out and doing anything. AI offers you essentially the same experience without worrying about ghosting, because it's programmed to always respond to you.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening, is it's creating these weird, like totally out of touch experiences because people are just fed up.
And what's crazy about that is that it reinforces the norm of, if we're saying that people are circling around intimacy, performing intimacy, acting in a way that imagines a kind of closeness but doesn't actually achieve it.
Mm.
And then with AI, that really perpetuates the idea, because you're interacting with something that feels intimate and close and trustworthy and safe, but will never give you recognizable feeling of true
love.
Yeah.
It's not authentic.
It's a complicated debate, isn't it? But it definitely makes worse some of these things that we're talking about.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think, I mean, but I can sit here and be like, oh, fuck, online dating, oh, it's all so made up. I met my boyfriend through Hinge.
And there's some lovely stories of that happening.
Really nice. But that was very different, where both of us kind of got a sense of what was going on before and we're like, oh, yeah, this is great. But I had some fucking stinkers. Mm. I have, you know the book... What's it called? It's like Goodnight Moon. You know, the like American classic where they go around and say goodnight to all the things in the room. I had on my Twitter a short poem that I published in that style.
Yeah, we're nodding with recognition. People need to hear it.
And it was after I deleted Hinge. So I've brought it in because I thought it would be pertinent.
The floor is yours, Sophie Park.
Okay. And it's called Goodbye instead of Goodnight. Goodbye, Irish rapper who didn't know what a metaphor was. Goodbye, deaf sperm donor. Goodbye, man who told me he loved me on the first date. Goodbye, man who said we should be more fatphobic. Goodbye, engineer who only spoke about the rental crisis. Goodbye, man who wore a ring from a Christmas cracker to impress me, as he saw that I wore rings. Goodbye, man who held my hand, told me about his dying father, and then immediately asked if I wanted a second date. Goodbye, man who said that rabbits were gay. Goodbye Man, I told about which hypothetical plastic surgeries I'd get, and he enthusiastically agreed with my choices. Goodbye Man who chased a fox and tried to put it in his room.
Oh, thank you very much. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought I'd bring the tone up because we were getting into what's the term, heterofatalism.
Yeah, which is okay. Sorry to bring it straight back down, yeah. But that comes from a woman called Asa Saracen. I hope I'm pronouncing her name right. She published this article before the other two articles called "On Heteropessimism" in the New Inquiry, which is a really interesting article. If you've got, you know, 15 minutes whilst you're having your cereal, I'd recommend reading it. So that's a softer, pessimism is a softer take to fatalism. Mm. And her article is really arguing everything that we've been talking about. She talks about the writer Maggie Nelson.
Bluettes.
Yeah. Love Maggie Nelson.
Yeah, and the Argonauts. Which is an amazing book.
I've not read it, but I know that you guys love Bluettes.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite books
ever.
And she says in the Argonauts, something to do with heterosexuality embarrassing her. And then that's a jumping off point for this article where this woman, Asa, is sort of interrogating the idea that there's like a hopelessness to the straight experience that people write about.
Mm.
And then there comes the term, yeah, and there comes the term heteropessimism. But then exactly what she ends up saying, which is what we're describing, is a phenomena rather than a feeling to sort of support. And she says that ultimately the term's kind of dangerous because it silences women's desires and agency to have happy and successful relationships. And that there's this thing that she says about if you're constantly disappointed by heterosexuality, you're like refusing the idea of changing the culture that you're describing as wrong's not the right word, but as damaging. If that makes sense.
I mean, it is like one of the things that kind of pisses me off a lot is women in general being like, yeah, like all men suck. Boys suck. They're never going to be da, 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 da. But it's like they're all like, you know, they're all ugly. They're all gross. They're all stinky. It's like, yeah, okay. But like part of being heterosexual, part of being bisexual as women is being attracted to men. We shouldn't, I think maybe it's very specific to like the bi women experience. As a bi woman, you feel quite shamed. Or like ashamed that you're attracted to men,
right?
And you're not fully
that's
gay.
That's exactly what I think is what she's talking about in the article. What she's saying that Maggie Nelson is expressing, but that that's a really complicated thing to deal with. And I know there's room for more hetero like optimism,
hetero optimism. But I think in general, like everyone's kind of like it's like what we were talking about before with the lift.
Yeah.
How the left kind of pull itself apart. We're kind of doing that in dating as well, because I totally hear what you're saying about that being a bi women experience. Yeah, sorry. Did the accent come out really hard on that one?
I was like, when are we talking about lifts?
No, the lift, L-E-F-T.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
Because I think straight women do that as well.
Yeah.
They're just like, I fucking hate all men, but then you're kind of like forced to date them. And it's like, this isn't really making anyone feel good, because it's like, you're not necessarily going out and engaging, you know, with an open heart and an open mind in the dating space. I should also say, like, I think it's fair enough if you've had horrible experiences. Obviously, you're going to be super protective. But it's like when you shut those walls out and you cut people out and you write people all off, when do you have the time and the space to engage with those people, create new dynamics, kind of like form this new, I guess, post fourth wave feminism dating sphere? And it's just like, if you're constantly shutting those conversations down and writing people off, like you can't do that. But I don't know.
I agree. And I think what you say as well about, but I also get why people are self-protective. And you know, 100%. A lot of that narrative is just responding to patterns of behavior. And also trying not to be, people being self-defensive to situations that, because of all the things we're talking about, happen time and time again. How many women do we know that have been broken up out of the blue by their partner? Who, you know, and then who vanishes, never to be seen again.
Yeah.
Also situationships where that happens, that there are situationships where one person lays out, you know, I can show you the world. It's the only place where my brain went, lays out the magic carpet is what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's the correct
analogy. Or like puts their cards on the table.
I don't know. I was just dealing. I was like imagining some guy like rolling out a carpet and being like, come fly through the sky with me.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at in my brain.
Okay.
And then the carpet vanishes. It's the perfect metaphor. Yeah. The carpet disappears.
Crash to earth.
I can show you that.
Yeah.
Floor.
And then you crash back down.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. Like there are so many, like, so pretty much everyone has had an experience where a man has disappointed or ghosted or disappeared or like not shown up in the ways that I feel like we as female friends do for each other.
Yeah, but I do not just think that this is a not, I let's just make it very clear, I'm not coming to men's defense on this, but I think that's just the state of modern dating irrespective of gender or sexuality, because as women, we ghost people all the time. People message us and we don't respond, or we just let the conversation fizzle out. I think there's a new kind of casualness that's become acceptable to do with online dating that would never be acceptable, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago and stuff. Like, we have a very dear friend of ours who people will message her on this dating app and she just responds, shut up.
That's quite funny though.
She's like, I'm kind of forced to be on here, but I don't want it. I don't want to talk to you and stuff. But that's what I mean, is I think it's just become so universal. We talk about dating a lot more as women with other women because we're having similar experiences. But like, you know, my male friends are having a fucking terrible time out there on Hinge as well. I think modern dating just fucking sucks.
I will say, I do think I agree with everything you're saying. But I think what I said earlier is also true with the idea that because it is existing like that at the moment, it reinforces stereotypical roles that women and men in dating often play of avoidantly attached man and anxiously attached woman. And I feel like those roles are really, they're exaggerated, where people are ghosting each other, where people are feigning intimacy. And I feel like that's where the problem occurs, is that those traits and tendencies or like traditional roles that people have played are being brought way more to the fore in a casual setting. And that can be really, I think that can be really difficult.
Okay, I see. Okay, I think I see what you mean, where it's basically like, after all the work that we've done with all the feminist movement and like men doing work and women doing work and kind of entering into this new society, it's still the women that's like checking in and doing the work to keep the relationship alive.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I'm with you and I agree.
We're still doing like the brunt of the like emotional labor and like,
yeah.
And again, I'm just thinking about, I'll speak on my own behalf, but when me and my ex broke up and I was so ready, and I know you guys have had similar experiences, I was so ready to make it work. And I remember being like, all right, okay, we're gonna do this, we're gonna make this better in these ways. And then he just broke up with me over the phone.
Yeah, classic.
It's like,
and it's totally a societal thing, because women, again, we're making a lot of statements here that are, you know, stereotypical, symbolic, like rather than whatever.
Sweeping generalizations.
Yeah.
But that's fine. That's what podcasts are about, really.
But ones which we understand to be true to our experience. Women are taught from a really young age to be healers, to be
carers.
Whereas men are taught to solve problems quickly. And there's a sort of difference in the way that we're taught to communicate because of that. And I think that, yeah, that can happen towards the end of relationships where people have very diverse, inherent views on how to solve things and which way to go about things. And I think that, we've seen that happen a lot. And I think it's a societal thing. And I don't think we're at the point yet where we've been taught enough about how to communicate properly with each other based on societal experiences of growing up in the world. I don't think there's enough like conversations about why we are the way that we're wired and how to meet in the middle with some of those things.
Yeah, I think that's all very true. And I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens over the next couple of years, because I'm not sure if you guys are aware, but in the UK, the top 10 dating apps saw a 16% drop in usage between 2023 and 2024. And in June 2025, Bumble laid off 30% of its global staff.
Wow.
And then shares in Bumble, Hinge and Tinder have dropped more than 80% since 2021. So it's just like everything's imploding. People aren't meeting in person because bars are closing down. And like what you were saying at the start, Emily, like people aren't approaching and meeting in real life. Or if they do, it's in this weird kind of like pickup artist way. But then if there's no dating apps, it's just like, where has everyone gone? Yeah. Like everyone's kind of vanishing. Yeah. So it'll be really interesting to kind of see what falls out. There is something quite interesting, which I'd like you guys to tell me what you think about this. This woman called Zoe Huxford published this article in The New Statesman called How Dating Apps Killed Romance. She talks about this app called Happn. Have you heard of it? The French app?
I've not heard of it. Happn.
And basically, it's a French app and it uses a geolocalization feature to allow users to connect with people that they cross paths with in their real
that
life.
That feels like Grindr. You know, where it's like they've got the radius.
Yeah, but it's basically like if you're both in a bakery, at least I think this is how it works. You're both in a bakery, you see someone attractive, you're too shy to ask them out because you're in a public setting, but you can see where people have tracked. Very stalkery, but then it's also like, what's the difference between that and walking down the street with someone to ask them out? That's the question. So is this something that you would use?
No.
Hard no?
That feels scary to me. What I would use is maybe like an alternative. Do you know the Pear, the rings? The little pastel rings?
No. I'm not aware of this.
I think it's called Pear. A guy that I went on a couple of dates with had one. And it's like you can wear a certain coloured ring and it's like branded, which indicates that you're single. So I guess with Happn, it's like you get a ping on your phone indicating that there's a hot single in your area.
What, like those clickbait ads you
said? Yeah, like
hot Christian mom in your area wants to meet up now.
In the local bakery.
Not to like state the obvious, but don't we have a system in place where people wear a ring to indicate whether or not they're available?
Well, with engagement and stuff. Yeah. But this is like it indicates that you're single and you're interested in, because I guess we have an engagement ring to imply that you're taken, but this is a ring to imply that you're single and looking to
ready to mingle.
Can I throw something? Let me educate you two beautiful English women. In Ireland, my dad is Irish, he's from Belfast. We have clatter rings and you often get them you know, as a present or whatever. I got mine from my parents when I was 21. And when you aren't married or widowed or anything, you wear it on your right hand and you have your heart facing in, if it's in a relationship, or you have the heart facing, like you flip it around and you wear it the other way if your heart is kind of like out and open to the world and you want to kind of like be in a relationship with someone. But then it's also like fucking brutal if you split up and you have to flip your platter rings facing back out again. So there's something kind of like that, but obviously it's a very like Celtic thing. So this isn't just like I'm single. This is like I'm actively looking to get into a relationship. This pear ring that you're talking about.
I think so. It's like, but there's different cut. Like, so that there's a purple one. I think if you're like, say, a bi woman and you're interested in men and women, so you can wear different colours depending on your sexual preferences as well, which I think is quite smart, especially as like a femme. Like, I feel like femme for femme, I'm often like, are they gay? Or like, are we just mates? You know? But yeah, it's like a way of visually signifying, I guess, like with gay men and the handkerchief.
Really reminding me of the pineapple.
What do you mean?
Oh, Alice's article.
Which is a good thing. It's actually really topical if you feel like talking about that.
Yeah. So for the listeners, I was given an assignment by the Daily Telegraph Boo.
Alice is also a journalist.
I'm a writer as well as a climate sustainability market woman. Anyway,
get your woman who can do both.
Yeah. I'm in all spheres. And I was sent to, by the Daily Telegraph, I was sent to, off the back, actually, of a piece I wrote about dating apps. So I wrote a piece for the Telegraph about why I was done, or why we're all done with dating apps. And then off the back of that, there was this viral TikTok trend happening in Spain, where people were going to Mercadona, which is like their equivalent to Tesco. La Mercadona.
Wow. Yeah, very good.
Because like basically my editor emailed me being like, hey, Alice, do you speak Spanish? And I was like, sí,
hablo, sí, señor.
Hablo un poquito español. And she was like, great, I need you to go to Spain now. I was like, what? And then literally, like, yeah, within like 48 hours, I was on this flight to Barcelona. My first time traveling on my own as well, like had never been abroad by myself before. So I was like shitting it. And I had to go to a supermarket, yeah, Mercadona, and get a pineapple and put it upside down in my trolley, because with this trend, it was that...
That is not a euphemism.
Yeah, that's literally what I was doing. Because in the trend, it was like single people were getting pineapples upside down in their trolley to indicate that they were single. And then you'd go to the wine aisle and bump trolleys with other single pineapple-having people, which is interesting because also pineapple is a signifier for swingers.
Yeah.
So like I... But this wasn't swinging. It was just like upside down pineapple, I'm single. And then there was other things, like if you had olive oil in your trolley, that meant you were looking for a rich man. If you had a bag of lettuce, one night stand, lentils, marriage, chocolate, summer fling.
But this is everything that I eat in a normal
I know,
basis.
Or you'd be in trouble. You'd be trouble.
And
you'd
I'd be so
much trouble.
Fucking annoyed if someone was coming and trolley ramming me and I was just trying to get my
You had everything. Please. I'm looking for everything.
I'm looking, don't care.
Just whatever.
Bring it over. Anyone, bring it in.
Yeah. I'm very conscious of time, but I have like one last kind of like point that would be interested to know what you guys thought of. I think the rings that you're talking about is super interesting, but I'm like, this is such a classic like commodification of dating where it's like, you're just trying to sell me another bit of tat.
I agree. And I just,
they're also not very attractive, the rings. Like they don't look good.
Oh dear.
I do generally think, and people say it all the time, but the part of the solution is encouraging people to communicate more in real life and to like, go out, look up from your phone, talk to people. Don't be creepy. There's an easy way to not be creepy in speaking to people.
Like the guy who bowed to us just now.
Oh, we had a man bow. A man bowed to us, guys, before we recorded this episode.
The only acceptable sort of catcalling interaction of all time. Emmeline sort of bumped into this lad who was entirely bald apart from this sort of like landing strip.
It was like a Tintin tuft.
Yeah, like a kind of like troll doll hairdo.
We're in Camden, by the way.
We're in Camden. And recording at the Roundhouse, saw Emily and kind of bumped into her and was like, oh wow, and then turned around and saw that there was, you know, two more sort of ridiculous women, Alice and I, behind, and he goes, oh my god, and then gets on his knees and is like bowing in the street.
Three beautiful women, three, praying to like fell on the floor, knees to the ground.
Also like hilarious as well, like we're in like trackies and like t-shirts. Yeah.
More of that, please, sir. That's my summary of the week. We need more of that.
Yeah.
I don't really know what my summary is other than to say, I don't know, I just feel like it's an...
Talk to everyone.
It's an interesting and topical conversation, and the solution to it is communication, as always, and to talk about things. And I feel like there just needs to be a greater area of understanding. I'm not a philosopher. I'm by no means an expert in these areas. I have failed myself in these areas and will fail again. But I don't want to feel fatalistic. I don't want to advance feeling negative about the state of things. And I don't want to worry that just because, I'm attracted to you, that means that I'm going to end up unhappy doomed or whatever. But, you know, communication, open to being let down, but not personally devastated by it. But that is easier said than done.
It's good to understand it. What is heterofatalism? We know now. Does it serve you? Probably not.
I'm always happy to throw hands on behalf of my fellow...
I don't know if I'm going to include that.
Yeah.
My fellow women.
You're also so nice. Like, you'd have the fighting talk, but I think you would keep your fist.
You are being arrested for being too sexy.
Yeah. Sexy bees. That was super interesting. I feel like I actually learned loads and loads. That was super cool.
Great.
Thank you. Lots of FFT.
Lots of FFT.